Okay, you were saying it was difficult to find a job for long graduate, for graduate school.
Yes. And many of the students who were trained in chemistry never did chemistry because they couldn't get jobs. The teaching profession had sort of dried up. I mean, they were hiring practically no teachers, very few, and in the New York City public school system. And what most of these graduates in those years did, they became social workers. They became investigators for the welfare system, because there weren't any who were trained for that particularly, so they would take any college graduates. But in any case, I was the only one of my graduating class that went to graduate school at Columbia in chemistry.
Did you think of going anywhere else?
Oh, I couldn't afford to. The reason I could go to Columbia is that I had worked summers and I had enough money for the tuition, which was at that time $300 a year. And I had been working summers, and I could live at home. So that wouldn't cost me anything.
Was there anything particularly interesting about the jobs you had during the summers?
I was a chemist. No, not as a chemist. I was a counselor at a day camp. And I also worked in Macy's, which was another thing that college graduates did in those days. I was actually offered, I worked at Macy's on Saturdays for quite a while, and I was offered by the buyer in the department. I worked in electrical goods in the last 2 years I worked there. I worked there for a month before this day camp started full time, and I preferred the day camp job, so I quit. But before I quit, the buyer offered me a job as an assistant buyer. So he offered me a career in merchandising. I told him I wasn't interested. So even though jobs were hard to come by, I wasn't going to become a buyer in the department store. And I went to graduate school.
So you got up there and you opted for the wrong courses initially?
Well, and then that was corrected.
Okay.
And I took a course in organic chemistry, I took a course in thermodynamics, I took a course in the phase rule.
Okay.
J.J. Beaver.
Who taught the organic course?
It was a lab course. And it was taught by Bogert, but I never saw him. It was taught by his assistant, whose name I don't remember.
Davidson wasn't his assistant, I remember.
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
Wasn't there.
Okay. And the thermodynamics course?
Yeah. The first half was taught by Urey, and the second half was taught by Hammett, or maybe some troopers, but each taught a half of that course. It was a year course. What else did I take? Oh, I took a course in physics. I took mechanics. Pegram taught that. That was a year course also. And then I took a semester course in the history of organic chemistry, which Nelson taught.
Oh,
it was a delightful course. Absolutely the most enjoyable course I took that first year. I also took a course in molecular spectroscopy that was taught by Urey. Without knowing quantum mechanics, may I add, I took that course. I was always taking courses for which I didn't have the background. Got an A in the course, too. But that's the course in which I had this beautiful notebook which I had contributed to the Urey archive. Because it was a notebook on that course, and it was in the days when you had to draw these energy diagrams and transitions, Hund's case A and Hund's case B, and so on. Anyhow, I enjoyed that course very much. I had already decided that Urey was the man that I wanted to work with, to see even then if I should go on with my graduate work.
As a result of being in contact with him as a student?
That's right. The course he gave in thermodynamics, so he was often got mixed up and so on. and he wasn't the best teacher in the world. He had such enthusiasm. And occasionally I saw a glimpse of really profound. I remember in Feathers and Manners, well, I won't go into it, but he did. And on the other hand, Hammett was so boring and so sufferific. It was hard to keep awake in his.
I was going to ask you about that. Mm-hmm. I'd heard the same thing from a number of other people. So
he was a terrible lecturer. So the other thing about Columbia, which disappointed me greatly, I had this very romantic notion about research. And the reason I went to graduate school is that I wanted to do research. Well, at that time at Columbia, I don't know if they've changed their system, no graduate student could do any research until they had passed the qualifying exam and chosen a professor to work with and been accepted. Well, you couldn't do that in your first year. So you never got into a lab unless you took a lab course. Well, I also took a laboratory course in physical chemistry with Beaver, which was an excellent course. Yes, it was in that first year that I took it.
You already took a lot of courses.
Well, some of them were only semester courses. I took 30 credits altogether.
Okay, so you didn't.
And if your grades were good enough, you got a master's degree without a thesis, without an examination. If your grades,
after a year?
After a year, after 30 credits. If your grades weren't good enough, you could still get a master's if you took an examination and passed it satisfactorily. Well, I didn't have to take the exam. I was just handed this master's degree after a year of coursework. Which, well, I don't know why they did it. They had at that time.
It may have been tied into the high school system. And the teachers had to get master's degrees, and they would come back and get master's degrees with 30 credits of work or something.
Maybe so. Because, you see, they had about 200 graduate students in the 30s, of whom 75 were candidates for the PhD. Others were master's candidates, and some just took a course or two.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there were a lot of people who worked and came to take a course or two, you see.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there were some people who had jobs at City College who used to come and take some courses. But anyhow, I took these 30 credits that year and I got a master's degree. But I was very disappointed about not being allowed to have the opportunity to do research. Well, I was taking a course in physics, and one day I was in the physics department and I see a notice on the bulletin board. All graduate students interested in doing research should come and talk to Professor Robbie. So I decided this was for me. So I went to speak to Robbie, and he said, well, you know, if you do research for me, you sometimes have to stay here until midnight, and so on. And that sounded great to me. That was my idea of the real McCoy, you know. That's the way you did research. So everything was going well, and then he asked me what I was doing at the time. I said, well, I'm taking a master's degree in the chemistry department. He said, well, if you want to work for me, you'd have to shift over to physics. And then I told him that I was going to leave at the end of the year. And he said, oh, he wouldn't take me. He said, in 6 months, you'd break more than you'd make. He said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I have to go out and find a job. I have no money. I can't continue as a graduate student. He said, well, what kind of job do you think you can get? He said, you know, the best you can do is be a saleswoman in Macy's. So I thanked him very kindly, but I said that I didn't have the money and therefore I could not stay on. And so I never worked.
There was no support for graduate students at that time. Or
I should tell you, there was support for graduate students. There were teaching assistantships.
Right.
But they were not available to women students, because they were all in Columbia College, and Columbia College was a male, all male school. And they told me that they had had bad experience in World War I. That was even before my time. And they would not have a woman as a teaching assistant. in anything but graduate courses. And of course, as a first-year student, I couldn't be a teaching assistant in a graduate course. And there were very few of those.
There were a number of women faculty. Women students at Columbia.
Oh, yeah.
Because there were so many people who worked for Sherman in
That's
particular.
That's right. There were quite a few women students.
And Howard.
I don't know how Sherman, whether Sherman had some support for his students or not, that I cannot tell you. But the others, there weren't many. The ones who were going for master's degrees supported themselves. There was no support for them. There were some scholarships. But they were the kind of scholarships where you had to have been born in some town in Ohio and be have parents who were missionaries in China. None of these are girls in the
I just sound so I don't forget it. I better put it in my.
So you decided you had to find a job. How did you find a job?
Well, when I was a senior at college, I took a civil service examination for junior chemists. It's really amusing. It was halfway through my senior year, and I took it as an analytical chemist. And I only had half of my course in quantitative analysis, so I just read the rest of the book, and I passed the exam. And just at toward the end of my year at Columbia, in early May, I got a letter offering me a job.
How timely.
Yes. At the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, NACA, which was the predecessor of NASA. So I accepted with alacrity. Then came a second telegram. This job has nothing to do with chemistry. It's connected with doing computations in aerodynamic research. And it is not a junior chemist job, it's a junior scientific aide job. Well, I thought I have nothing to lose. I'll go down there.
This was in Washington?
No, it was in Langley Field, Virginia. I'll go down there for the summer and work, and if I don't like it, I'll quit at the end of the summer and try to do something else. So I took that job at the end of that year. And when I came down there, I found out that as a junior scientific aide doing computational work, it meant working what they called a calculating machine at that time. It was a Marchand. I don't know if you know what they were like in those days. If you had to there was no electrical thing at all. Oh, you turned it manually. You see, no, you didn't turn it at all. This was Mark 1. If you had to multiply, let's say, a 5-digit number by 333, you banged 3 times, then you moved your hand over to the next column and did it 3 times again. And once again, that's how you did it. To do division, it was nothing but an adding machine, you see. To do division, you sat there with a table of reciprocals in front of you, and you went through the same procedure. Occasionally, we did things with slide rules, and occasionally, we have to make graphs, too. But most of it was working this Marchand calculator. Well, at the end of 2 weeks, also I should say, tell you that there were about 6 young women who were doing this. They were all college graduates. And the ones who were there before another girl and I arrived at the same time, the older ones were very competitive, and they used to vie with each other to see how many calculations they could do in a day. Well, it was more strenuous than typing away at a typewriter for 8 hours a day. In those days, one worked 8 hours a day. And I decided, and so did this other young woman, she was a school teacher who was taking this job. And she decided she wasn't going to stay. And I decided that if I had to do this, I wasn't going to stay. But I let it be known far and wide that I was a chemist. And was there any place in the research establishment there that needed a chemist? unfortunately, someone said, yes, he wants to be a chemist. And so I went to work in the engine laboratory as a chemist. And it was a section called fuel injection. So I worked for the next 2.25 years on combustion and engines. Well, if you looked at my physiography,
yes,
you'd see that the first two papers were on that subject.
Factors affecting combustion in internal combustion engine and combustion in bomb with fuel injection system. That was fuel injection systems were. That was really looking forward.
Well, I was in a section called the fuel injection section.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, they were trying to develop an engine there, an airplane engine. This was long before the days of jets, you understand. I went down there in May of 1932. And what this engine section was trying to develop was an engine that used the diesel cycle and fuel injection, but with spark ignition. You see, an ordinary diesel is much too heavy for an airplane. In an airplane, the important thing is the power-weight ratio. And they wanted to take advantage of the diesel cycle, which is much more efficient than the other cycle. But they didn't want to go to as high pressures as diesel engines go, because they didn't want to use heavy materials. And so this was to try to combine the best of both and use spark ignition and try out various fuels and so on and so forth. That was the problem.
Oh, I had tried to reach him earlier.
I was the only woman among 70 men researchers.
70?
Mm-hmm.
You said, oh my.
Oh, it was a big, fairly big institution. They did not only engine research, but aerodynamic research. That was their main thrust. They had a full-scale wind tunnel.
This was your first exposure to real research.
Well, not only to real research, to a job in doing applied chemistry, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have gotten very far if I hadn't had a very sympathetic superior. He was really a very nice man. He and I decided to study statistical mechanics together, for example.
Oh.
He was a physicist. He wasn't an engineer.
What was his name?
Rothrock. R-O-T-H-R-O-C-K. I once came across a some publication from the NACA. The engine lab eventually moved out to Cleveland. I saw that he was the director.
Mm-hmm.
So that was many years later.
Okay. So then you decided to go back to graduate school, or job ended, or?
Well, I should tell you several things about the job. For one thing, they had given me this rank of junior scientific aide. That's a sub-professional rating, unlike a junior chemist, which is the first rung of the ladder of professional rating. I didn't know that when I got the job. I would have taken it anyhow, but I didn't know it. And I found that to go from a sub-professional rating to a professional rating was an almost impossible hurdle. And the reason was that they didn't want a woman as a professional with a professional rating. They told me so. The man who was the head of this whole organization, he was in Washington. This is, by the way, this laboratory was an independent agency. It wasn't under any of the departments. And the man who was the head of it, a man by the name of Lewis, was very much opposed to women scientists. And he came through the laboratory once, unbeknownst to me. I was working there, and I was wearing one of these mechanics coats, you know, because I was in an engine laboratory. It was not that clean and fairly greasy. Anyhow, he saw me, and he sent down a directive that I was not to work in the laboratory. So, I said in my usual way, well, if I'm given someone to do the laboratory work, I'll sit here and think up the experiments and have someone do the laboratory work for me. And indeed, that's what happened. They assigned, he was in my section, he was a physicist, junior physicist. He had a professional rating. And he worked
for you.
In fact, you notice that paper, the second paper, was by me and someone called Robert Spencer. And that was the young man who was working for me. How they ever got that by the head of the lab, I don't know. But anyhow, that's what actually happened. And I had designed the equipment and I had done the initial experiments. But after that, he did the experiments for me. In the meantime, they were raising my salary, and pretty soon, I should tell you, the salary for a junior scientific aide in those days was $1,440 a year. Which was considerably less than a junior chemist who got $2,000 a year. And the first, after I was there a month, there was an across-the-board cut in all federal employees. You remember, this was the Depression of 32, of 10%. So I ended up having a salary of $1,300 a year. I eventually, after 2 years, was getting $1,740 a year, which was the top of this level of junior scientific aid. And I went to see not the division chief, who was above my section chief, and asked him if I had any chance at all of ever getting a professional rating. And he said no. And I asked him why, and he said it was because the head of the organization didn't believe in having women scientists. And I asked him why, and he said, first of all, they may have men working under them. That I already did didn't seem to register. And the other thing is it would bring on too many divorces, because what happens when a woman professional works with men professionals is that the men professionals divorce their wives and marry the women professionals. Well, with that enlightened attitude, I thought I'd better leave. So I needed money still. And so I didn't leave. I took a leave of absence and I went back to Columbia. Now, I had become very interested in the problem I was working on down at Boston thing. It was a very interesting problem, and particularly in fuel injection, I wanted to be able to study the rate of evaporation of the fuel droplets. It depended on, of course, on the design of the fuel injection nozzle and so on. But I had gotten the idea that a nice way of studying it was to do Milken's oil drop experiment in reverse, which is to just charge the particles and let them stay suspended, and as they changed in size, they would move, and you would be able to figure out how fast they were evaporating. Anyhow, that was an idea I had. And I thought, well, I'm going back to Columbia. Why don't I get a PhD in chemical engineering instead of in chemistry? That's much more suitable for this kind of problem. See, I'm still troubled with money. This way, I thought I could take all the coursework necessary and then go back and do the research, actually, in that laboratory. It was a fine laboratory with wonderful facilities. I mean, the shop facilities were unbelievable. Just incredible. The kind of instruments they had an instrument section that designed instruments. You just told them what you wanted. They designed it. Then they had a shop that turned out the most beautiful stuff you ever saw. And then they had another section of people who put these instruments together. They were all former watchmakers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can tell you that I have never since been in a place where they had facilities like that place had in the way of the support facilities for researchers. Was really remarkable. Anyhow, so when I came back to Columbia, I found out that there were no women in the chemical engineering department as students. But I went to see the chairman of the department anyhow. I told him my interest that I'd been working essentially in chemical engineering. That's what I considered.
It was
the
chairman of chemical engineering. You don't remember.
It
was different. It was not the chairman of the chemistry department.
Oh, no.
It was quite a separate department.
But he was in Havemeyer Hall.
Okay.
And the students also were in Havemeyer Hall.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the male students kidded me about it. I talked to them first, and they said I could never take the chemical engineering course because there was a power plant course involved, which required stripping to the waste. It was so hot down there, and I, of course, couldn't do that. Well, I went to see the chairman of the deposit, and I told him of my interest and what I had been doing. And after all, I had two papers already. And he told me that they hadn't had any women students, and they didn't plan to start with me, and that was that. So I went back to the chemistry department, and for the first semester, I just took courses again because I still didn't have enough to take the qualifying exam. Also, I had been away from chemistry for a while, particularly from inorganic chemistry. I had to study it by myself that semester so that I could take a qualifying exam. Well, I took a course. What courses did I take that semester? Oh, I took a physics course. Oh, yes, I should tell you an amusing anecdote about that. Yuri suggested that I go over to his friend Robbie in the physics department to ask him what physics course I should take, recommend what physics course I should take. So I went over to see him, and he recognized me. And his first comment was, "Much water has flown under the bridges since you were here." I should tell you that I think he'd only been at Columbia a year when he put up that notice for his students. But by now he'd become well established. In those 2 years he made a lot of great discoveries, and so he was on his way up, definitely. He said to me, "What have you been doing these last 2 years?" So I told him. And he said, "I told you all you could get with the job of a saleswoman to make."